From NPR and the Futuro Media Group, it's Latino USA. I'm Maria Hinojosa. This week, we're live and right back where we started from, our live show from KUT in Austin, Texas, where we've got stories.
Y no cualquier luz roja. Se estaba tardando la vida.
It wasn't just any red light. It was one that was taking forever.
What it's like getting caught speeding to your dream job. And Latina tech leaders tell us, don't worry. Just put yourself out there.
So I think a lot of what I've done, and I encourage others to do, is then go out and find those networks.
We've got DJs, sound effects, and so much more. It's our South by Southwest show. You don't want to miss it. It's all coming up on Latino USA. I'm Maria Hinojosa. No se vayan. You're Latino USA. I'm Maria Hinojosa, and we're here in the always happening and proudly weird Austin, Texas, for our second ever live taping in front of a studio audience at the wonderful studios of KUT Radio. So right now, South by Southwest is going on, and it couldn't be a better environment for a live show here at the University of Texas at Austin, the birthplace of our show. Joining us on stage throughout our show is DJ Orion, who is rocking the turntables. He'll be teaching me how to DJ a little bit later in the show. But first, we start off with a little Spanglish. After all, Texas is as bilingual a place as it could be in this country. Now, there's something really amazing about walking into a restaurant here in Texas and knowing that you could be greeted in English just as easily as in Spanish, regardless of what you look like. So I'd like to welcome to our show two Tejana sisters, Austinites, who are going to be telling one story in two languages. Here's Ana Maria Garcia and Amparo Garcia Crow with a wonderful tale of rebellion. It's called Little Late, Lot of Trouble.
Mil gracias. Una vez, yo tenía el trabajo de mis sueños.
One time I had the job of my dreams.
Mi trabajo era anunciar los números ganadores de la Lotería de Texas.
My job was to announce the winning numbers of the Texas Lottery.
Un sábado, iba al trabajo encantada de la vida.
One Saturday, I was on my way to my work, and I was just happy as could be.
Me acuerdo bien porque era Texas OU fin de semana.
Yes, I remember because it was OU weekend when the Longhorns are playing their rivals, the University of Oklahoma.
Tenía mucho espíritu yo ese día. Tenía mi traje anaranjado con los Longhorns.
I had so much spirit that day. I was wearing my Go-Horns, burnt orange.
Estaba muy feliz hasta que encontré tráfico.
Yes, I was so happy till the traffic became a problem.
Me puse poco nerviosa porque me acordé que mi jefe me había dicho, ya no llegues tarde al trabajo.
I got really nervous because my boss had already told me, Ana María, you cannot be late for work again.
Es importante que les diga que yo tengo problemas a llegar a tiempo y problemas con autoridad.
I have to tell you that I have a couple of problems. One is with getting to work on time, or anywhere on time. And the other is I have a problem with authority.
So pensé, le voy a sacar la vuelta. Me salí por un éxito.
So I say, well, I'll just take a little U-turn. I'll just take this exit.
Pero luego encontré una luz roja.
But there was a red light.
Y no cualquier luz roja. Se estaba tardando la vida.
It wasn't just any red light. It was one that was taking forever.
Me fijé el tiempo.
I looked at the time.
Me puse más nerviosa.
Oh, and I got more nervous.
Otra cosa que tengo que confesar. Mis hormonas estaban afuera de control.
Yes, something else I must confess. My hormones, I was PMSing.
Puedo ver mi jefe. No estés tarde. So me fijé a la izquierda. Oh, y me entró la idea a brincar el mediano.
I can just hear my boss, and I'm getting really nervous. And I look to my left, and I see the median. And I go, you know, I can jump that median.
Ya lo había hecho antes.
I had already done that once.
Solo brinqué.
So I did it.
Pero encontré esta vez una policía.
But this time there was a police car there.
Porque había construcción, so estaba protegiendo ahí el lugar.
There was construction, so he was guarding the place.
Y pensé, ay, no me vio, no me vio.
And I thought, no, he didn't see me.
Y luego vi en la espeja, en el espejo, las luces.
But then the rearview mirror, I could see the red light. I mean, the woo, 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 woo.
Ay, entonces me puse muy ansiosa. Me sacó de onda completamente.
I got really anxious and I started to feel a little crazy.
Que cuando se paré el carro, prontito, muy nerviosa, busqué los papeles del aseguro,
mi
licencia.
And very quickly I started rifling through all the papers in the glove box looking for the insurance or my driver's license.
Bajé la ventana y me fijé que la policía era una mujer muy atractiva, una color güero, de oro, y muy pequeña, muy chiquita, más chiquita que yo.
So I rolled the window down, and I was surprised, because it was a female police person. And she was more petite than me, and she was blonde.
Y le dije, señora, hay millones de personas en Texas dependiendo en mí que yo anuncie los números. ¿Me puedes seguir al estudio y me escribe el tiquete ahí, por favor? Ahí en el centro del pueblo.
So I said, ma'am, there are millions of Texans waiting for me to announce the winning numbers. Could you please just follow me to the studio? You can give me the ticket, but follow me to the studio.
Oh, no me tuvo compasión. No, nada, me dijo...
No, she did not have a lot of compassion for me.
Yo voy a tomar mi tiempo.
Ma'am, I will take my time.
Más que me enojé.
Oh, I got madder.
Pero marqué mi jefe.
Well, I tried to call my boss, dialed it on my cell phone.
Y no contestó el teléfono.
He's not picking up the phone.
Le dejé un recado.
I left a message.
Y más nerviosa que me puse porque el tiempo...
The time is ticking, and so I leave a very nervous message.
Me salí del carro y le dije a la señora, señora, y me dijo, oh, más brava, métete al carro, espérame en el carro.
So I get out of the car, big mistake, and she sees me and she says, not very nicely, get back in the car, ma'am.
Pues a este punto me dio tanto coraje que le metí el pie al carro y me arranqué.
Oh my God, at this point I am so angry that my foot, it just hits the pedal and off I go. I take off.
Instante criminal.
I was an instant criminal.
Evading arrest. Evading felony.
Arrest. ¿Cómo se dice felony en español?
Felony.
A felony.
Y luego pensé, porque me vi en el espejo, tres policías siguiéndome en el, arriba, el superior, el upper.
El pussy, el upper thing.
Upper deck.
Ay, pues the worst thing was that I look in the rearview mirror and there's three cops chasing behind me on the upper deck of IH-35.
Me acordé de O.J. Simpson y el Bronco Chase.
Yeah, I thought of O.J. Simpson on the TV being chased on that Bronco on the L.A. freeway.
So le llamé a 911.
So I called 911.
Y les rogué, por favor, háblenle a la policía. No soy criminal, nomás que me siguen al estudio.
I called 911 and I begged them, please tell the police I'm not a criminal. I just need them to follow me to the studio because I announced the winning numbers for the Texas Lotto.
Yo anuncio los números ganadores de la Lotería de Texas. Me dijo, señora, muy seriamente, si se están siguiendo los policías, vale más que pares el coche.
Well, the very nice lady says, ma'am, if there are three police cars following you, it's best that you pull over now.
Todo lo me sentía muy bravo, todo a ese punto, se me hicieron lágrimas.
At that point, I'm not only angry, but I'm just so sad. The tears are just pouring down my face.
Me pusieron, se dicen esposos de manos, pero son...
Handcuffs. They put handcuffs on me.
y llore y llore
and
con
I'm
un
crying.
Sentimiento.
And crying with such sadness.
Que le rogué al policía y el señor me tuvo lástima.
Well, I started begging the other policeman, and this was a gentleman, and he had compassion for me.
Él sacó el celular, teléfono de él y marcó mi jefe.
He took out his cell phone and he called my boss.
Esta vez contestó mi jefe.
This time he did answer.
Y oyó toda la conmoción y le dije, mire.
And
no,
he could hear all the commotion and I said, sir.
No puedo ir al trabajo, me están arrestando.
I cannot be at the job, they're arresting me.
Pero salí de ahí como instante criminal, instante celebrity.
Yes, I was an instant criminal, but I was a celebrity all of a sudden.
Me pusieron en NPR.
I was on NPR.
Hice noticias nacionales.
I was on all the news, the national news, maybe
en
even international.
Todas las noticias en Austin.
All the news in Austin.
En el Austin Statesman.
American Statesman.
En la esquinita donde todos miran mi mugshot.
And they put me on the corner, in the bottom corner, that even if you're not reading the darn article, you're going to turn the page, and there I was, my mugshot.
Hasta mi tía en el sur de Texas, mi pueblito humilde, tenía satellite.
Even my aunt in the middle of nowhere, South Texas, she sees me on the news.
Dijo, Ana María García tiene que ser Austin, la lotería.
Ana María García, it has to be our Ana María García because she does the lottery.
Bueno, pues mis jefes no estaban feliz conmigo. Me escribieron una carta y me dijeron que estoy muy volútil para televisión vivo.
Well, sadly, I get a letter from my bosses because they're not happy with the situation. And they say, Ana María García, you are too volatile for live television.
Yo me creía la gran patada. Pareció que yo me creía muy celebridad porque yo decía, pero mi trabajo es anunciar los números ganadores de la Lotería de Texas.
Yes, unfortunately, the news, the item that they put out there was that I thought because of my celebrity and I was the person who announced the winning numbers for the Texas Lottery, that's why I wanted them to give me special treatment.
Y el artículo decía, little late, lotto, trouble, rushed worker, jailed.
Sí.
So ahora cuando voy a prisa.
So now when I'm in a big hurry.
Y miro a la izquierda y me da esa mentra esa idea.
And I look to the left and I think about what I have done before.
Pienso no vale la pena.
Oh, I decide no, it's not worth the pain.
I guess that means no more median jumping for the both of you.
Absolutely.
No more median no jumping. More median. Thank you so much.
And I don't recommend it to the audience either.
No more median jumping for our audience. Thank you, Ana María García and Amparo García Crow. Ana María is a realtor and an actor here in Austin. Her sister, Amparo, is a writer, director, and actor, as well as the host of The Living Room, Storytime for Grownups, a weekly storytelling series here in Austin. And coming up on Latino USA, we talk to tequinistas Sara Inés Calderón and Luz Rivas about why being Latino is actually an advantage when it comes to tech. Stay with us, no se vayan, with our live show here at South by Southwest in Austin, Texas. Woo!
Thank you.
Welcome back to Euro Latino USA. I'm Maria Hinojosa, live here in Austin, Texas. Now, at South by Southwest, we've been talking a lot about Latinos in tech, and the conversation has really been about flipping the narrative. Latinos in tech are innovators, they're collaborators, they're mentors, and they're makers. So today we're joined by two Latinas who know all about what it takes to make it in tech. Bloguera Sara Inés Calderón writes about technology and innovation for Mass Wired and TechCrunch. And Luz Rivas is the founder of and executive director of DIY Girls, a nonprofit organization that provides mentorship and hands-on technical training for young Latinas who want to build technology. Welcome to Latino USA. Welcome back, both of you. All right, Luz, let's start with you. So, you know, what are the barriers essentially for entry for Latinos and Latinas entering the technology field?
I think some of the barriers are having access to the activities and the experience. Like for me, I started in elementary school, and that's how I got started with technology. And not a lot of the schools in Latino-serving neighborhoods are offering programs and experiences for kids to get excited about technology so that when they're ready to go to college, they know that that's what they want to do.
Sara, so for so many young Latinos, particularly those who are going to college for the first time, you know, the message is, that's amazing, you've made it to college. But what's wrong with that message of just like, okay, you've made it through college, everything is going to work out great for you when you're a Latino who wants to or Latina who wants to move into technology?
Well, I think what we kind of have to realize, and I think I've heard people say this, it's almost become cliche, that unfortunately, a bachelor's degree isn't going to get you through the door the way it once did. And so even a master's degree or JD is not going to get you to where you want to be. And so I think one thing that would really behoove not just Latino students, but all of us is kind of think, you know, life is just going to be a series of challenges. And so, okay, great, you went to college. Now what are you going to do? It's not just a matter of like, I did college, now come perfect life, come to me because I did what I was supposed to do. It's more a more complicated path, I think, than we kind of, you know, originally thought. I certainly did when I was growing up.
So Luz, what about that message in terms of wanting to move into the tech field? If you get out of college or even with a master's, then what do you have to do if you want to move into tech?
I think you have to go out and meet people that are already doing tech. Have mentors, but meet others. Go to events and participate in societies and groups where you'll meet others that will be able to give you advice on how it really is working in the tech field.
So essentially put yourself out there. Don't be afraid
yes,
to put
because
yourself
a lot of
there.
Us don't come from families where there are tech professionals. So we don't have anyone to ask. Even though our families are very encouraging of it, we don't have that. They're not introducing us to their friends that are in tech. So I think a lot of what I've done, and I encourage others to do, is then go out and find those networks.
So both of you believe right now that actually being a Latino is actually an asset when you're thinking about tech. Why, Sara? Let's start with you.
Absolutely, I do. I mean, I think recently I was kind of talking about how being bilingual and being bicultural kind of gives me a different perspective on technology. So I've actually written about how why does the internet hate my name when I put the accents?
Yours too, eh?
When I put the accents in, or when I have like two words for my first name, sometimes these data fields where you have to submit your name and address to buy something, it just freaks out. And I've literally crashed websites with my name before. So, and then also, you know, I text in English and Spanish. And so it's either auto-correcting to English or
I hate that. It drives me crazy.
You know, so, I mean, for me, I think, you know, and I speak two languages, and I did learn Portuguese when I was in college. And I was telling Luz that when I started learning Portuguese, I realized how multiple languages really kind of helps you think about multiple opportunities outside of just language itself, because you're really thinking about multiple ways to talk about the world. And so I think that language is certainly one way, and obviously culture. I mean, I think Luz can definitely speak to the fact that, you know, when you start using things for things that for purposes for which they were not intended, you kind of just start thinking outside the box anyways. And that ultimately is what innovation is all about. And so I certainly think that not just being bilingual, but bicultural and kind of maybe coming from a different, you know, socioeconomic background is really going to kind of bring something to innovation. And I find that when I do speak to people about Latinos and the way Latinos use technology, for example, like higher consumption of digital video and via mobile, that really piques people's interest because maybe that's not how they thought of technology. So
what about for you, Luz? I mean, how do you flip the narrative and actually say, in a big way, if you're a Latino, you actually have these assets for a life in technology.
I see being Latina as an asset because I come from a community of makers. The community I grew up in is an immigrant community, mainly from Mexico and Central America, and they all come with skills. I know woodworkers in the community, metal workers, seamstresses. So if I want to make a prototype for an idea, I can go within my community and ask the señor down the street, la señora next door. And so just being able to see that we do have assets in the community, we have mentors that know how to make things. And that's one huge step about becoming an engineer or in tech, is being able to build and prototype things.
So is the glass half full or half empty? Sometimes I tend to think it's a little half empty, but tell me, is it half full for Latinos in tech?
Well, I think that it's definitely, I want to say.
So it's not a one-way, all fabulous, you know, gold rush, no.
Yeah, I wouldn't say it was necessarily a black or white, but what I do think, and again, we can all agree that there's not as many Latinos in technology or working in those types of fields as there should be, but given the fact that there are so few, when you show up, you are, so I find that people are very interested because they haven't met someone like you before. So I feel like that can almost be, you know, a half full situation as well, because you're almost like a unicorn in that sense. And so,
but some people feel, a lot of Latinos who I've met actually don't like being unicorns. Sorry.
Oh. Well, you know, I mean,
sense that suddenly, like, you know, oh my God, you're at this tech conference and you're a Latina. Oh my God. And you're just like, yeah, there are actually hundreds of me, but
I don't like it. When people see me that way, mainly because it reminds me that there's so few of us out there. And I do know a lot of Latinos in tech, you know, and that I've interacted with, and maybe it's just, we're not participating in conferences like South By and other tech conferences.
All right. So Luz, you actually work with young women with your program DIY Girls to actually build things, right?
Yes.
And you have actually brought something that you're going to show us. I think it's a game.
Yes. It's a Dance Dance Chancla Revolution. That's the name of the game.
Dance Dance Chancla Revolution. For people who don't know chancla, it would be
a slipper.
Okay. Well, slipper.
I know. I don't know how to say often chancla in English.
Often plastic.
Yeah.
Often used as a weapon sometimes. Yeah. Okay. So you're now, I'm not wearing my chanclas, I'm wearing my regular 6-inch heels. Am I going to have to take them off to go play
you
this?
You definitely have to take them off.
Híjoles, then everybody's going
to
see how short
the chancla.
I am. Oh man, the truth about my chaparranes is going to come out. All right.
Yeah.
So we're going to walk over here and you're going to show us what's going on with your game. All right, so what are we looking at now?
So this is a working prototype of a game that a team of young Latina girls developed from Telfair Elementary School in Pacoima in Los Angeles. The team decided to program their own dance dance game. So on the screen, what you see is like a dance studio or a stage, and there's different characters that you can choose. And the one on the screen is Selena Gomez. That's one of the options.
Okay.
And so
looks like me, sure.
The girls programmed the game using Scratch. So in the program, they're learning computer programming and coding. So that's one part of the project. And the second part of the project is then creating your own video game controller. So this is a working prototype that this chancla here.
It's a purple chancla, by the way.
It's a chancla that they made, purple and very glittery. And if you slip it on and...
Oh, yeah, I have to take off my heels. Hold on. It's going to take a minute. I could fall over. That would be
there's,
really bad.
There's four arrows on a platform on the floor, and they're made out of aluminum
foil.
So I have
to put this on my foot? Is that what you're saying?
Yes, go ahead and slip it on.
Is it sanitized?
Yes, definitely.
Okay, now I'm slipping on both or just one?
Just one.
Okay.
For now. And if I start the game, there'll
be... Oh my God, I'm getting nervous.
There'll be some music.
Now what?
And now you can tap the right arrow, and then the character on the screen will move to the right with the bottom of the chancla. So if you notice, she's moving to the right, okay. And now tap to the left.
Oh.
To the left, and now she moves. So it's you're controlling the game
with my
chancla.
Oh, yes. My God.
Yeah.
All right, come back here. Chancla. Okay. Oh, Now, can I move to the top or no? Not yet.
It's not connected right now, but you definitely can. And what the girls are doing is back home, they're creating a wooden platform that you'll be able to stand on. You'll be able to stand on the wooden platform and play the game. But this is just a working prototype, and that's how we get them started. Okay, build something that works. Once it works, then they're going to get more materials and make a full platform.
When your girls realized that they had actually put this all together, conceived of the idea of Dance Dance Chancla Revolution, did they suddenly feel like, what did you notice in them, Luz?
You know, they get very excited that they're making real things. You know, this is a game that we're going to put out, make a whole arcade in our space, and other kids are going to come and play with these types of games. And they feel empowered that what they're doing is something that others value.
With chanclas?
Yes, of course.
Everyone, give a round of applause to Luz Rivas and Sara Inés Calderón. Luz Rivas is with DIY Girls, and journalist Sara Inés Calderón is with Mass Wired. Thanks so much for joining us live on Latino USA.
Thank you.
If you listen closely to our credits, and by the way, you should definitely listen really closely to our credits, because at the end, we always have a little surprise sound at the end of each of our credits. But you'll hear us say that our show was actually created right here at the University of Texas at Austin at the Center for Mexican American Studies. So our show is now produced in New York City, in Harlem. But since we're in Austin, we wanted to call on an old friend to talk to us about the history of our show and why he loves living in Austin. So joining us is Mincho Jacob, who ran our program, Latino USA, for many, many years, sometimes all by himself. Mincho, it's great to have you back on the show.
Thank you. Thank you. Muchas gracias.
Okay, so Mincho, people can't see it who are listening to us, but we are now in an amazing studio here at KUT, but this is not what it was like when we first started Latino USA. So just give our audience a sense of what the setup was like producing Latino USA many years ago.
It was very interesting. We were across the street in the CMA back then, in the basement, a few of us from back there. And then we moved to another building, but it was always not very pretty, always trying to keep construction sounds out because it wasn't designed to be a radio place.
Well, I remember when I came, because I was always in New York, but when I came and I was like, wait a second, the offices of Latino USA are in the basement?
You know, it's classy. It's classy. Basements for sound are actually better because of sound deafening. But I remember the old NPR New York Bureau was not so sexy either back in the day.
That's true, too.
You know, you got to move on up.
So a lot of people think that we were always together in the years when you were producing the show out of Austin and I was based in New York. In fact, I was recording the show, you'll remember this, mm-hmm. out of a closet, my son's closet, that we had retrofitted as a studio where I would go in and I would record. And what would I say to my family? I would say...
The nice version of the...
Well, what do you remember me saying to my family when
Cállense,
I was...
Cállense.
Cállense.
Raúl.
Raúl, be quiet. And he'd be like, Mom, it's my bedroom.
But, you know, we were like on the cutting edge of remote technology. You had an ISDN line into your house, which was... Back then, that was a very high-tech, you know, a lot of people weren't doing things remotely so much in radio, so...
So we were definitely Latinos in tech.
All the way.
Leading the way.
Yes.
All right, then you moved to New York to work with us when Latino USA was moved to New York and produced now by the Futuro Media Group, but then you missed Austin too much.
It is true. Winter in New York is crazy, and I don't know how other Caribeños and other Latinos that go up there deal with it, because it is full of Caribbean peoples, but they love it, and I love New York for that. But Austin is a unique place. It has very deep roots of Latino culture that are changing a lot, because the city is changing sometimes for the good, sometimes not so good. It's gentrifying a lot on the east side, but there is still a very strong presence. Little Joe and La Familia used to play up here a lot back in the day in people's backyards.
So it's a music scene, but there's also this other side of Mincho. yeah. which is the food scene. It's the other side of Austin, too. Now, many people have seen this on television. It's one of the most famous barbecue spots in Austin. It's called Franklin Barbecue. And the whole thing about Franklin Barbecue, where you are now the general manager mm-hmm. and one of the creators, right?
Yeah, yeah. I helped start it back when I was actually working at KUT.
Well, you're a Latino. You've always got six different jobs. We know that. We know how it goes. Can never say no to work, no matter what it is. Sure, I'll produce radio. Sure, I'll be a journalist. Yeah, I'll wait tables and I'll cook. No problem.
Yeah, seriously. Yeah, yes. That's pretty much.
Now, the thing about Franklin Barbecue is that it's very well known because the people line up in the mornings and barbecue, the fresh barbecue that is made that morning.
We cook all night, like 18 hours. And then people start lining up about 6 in the morning, 7 in the morning. And
who are these people?
They're just people from all over. Some are tourists. Some are just like, I mean, like if you work in the service industry, which I do now, I have Tuesdays off. So I could go do that on a Tuesday if I was that, this is a very service industry town. There's a lot of people who work in restaurants, a lot of bars, a lot of musicians who are trying to pay the bills. So yeah, you can go spend a day over there, hang out with your friends, you know.
But the thing is that the food, then there comes a point where it's like it's done. There's no more, and there's no more barbecue.
Well, we cook all night, so once it's done, we're already cooking for the next day when we open. So it's a very traditional form. It's very old school. It's a barbecue in Texas is actually very rooted in German immigrant culture, African-American and Mexicanos, you know, cooking brisket, which was poor people food. Brisket is a really bad piece of meat. It's the breast of the cow and the first ribs. It's cheap. It was cheap. It's getting more expensive now because barbecue is getting very popular. But back then it was para los pobres. And so basically markets would throw out that meat at the end of the week. People would cook it on a Saturday and that was barbecue. And we do it the very traditional same way. And then we use very good all natural stuff and people line up. I think a lot of people want to try food like that away from like the McDonald'sization. I'm not trying to dog them, but you know.
Except that
industrialized
you gotta be in line.
Food, you
know,
gotta
people, be in line early. All right. Yeah. If you had to kind of wrap it up, I mean, we are back where Latino USA was created. Why do you think that Latino USA could have been birthed in a city like Austin, in a place like Texas?
That's a good question. It's kind of at the nexus of a lot of different things happening here. Austin and this area of Texas is booming economically, but it's always had a lot of things happening. And Latinos have always been a part of that. Also, an hour away south of here is San Antonio. That's like very Latino. You go north and it gets a lot wider. So like we're right on that forefront. And so that fight was always, I mean, it started out of the Center for Mexican American Studies, people who were occupying that building to create, that was actual community activists occupied CMOS to create that here at UT, and CMOS helped create us. So, you know, it's always to try to get people out into the forefront. And
so is Austin in your future, or are you thinking New York City?
I do miss actually Trinidadian vegetarian food. I make meat, and I try not to eat barbecue every
day. Very specific, Trinidadian vegetarian
food. Well, I lived in Bed-Stuy in Brooklyn, so I lived with a lot of Trinidadians, and there's not so many Trinidadians here, which is Indian and Afro-Caribbean food mixed together, right? And I really miss that stuff. It was delicious.
Well, we miss you too, Micho. It's so great to have you back on Latino USA in front of the microphones. Thank you for all the work that you did with Latino USA.
Gracias.
Micho Jacob. Micho Jacob is the general manager of Franklin Barbecue and a member of the band Como Las Movies. Coming up on Latino USA, the man you've heard in the background all during the show with the music, we learn more about DJ Orion. Stay with us on Latino USA live from Austin. No se vayan.
What?
Welcome back to Latino USA. I'm Maria Hinojosa, and we're here live in Austin. So how about that great music you've been hearing in the background of our show, huh? So it's all thanks to DJ Orion. He's the founder of the collective Peligrosa. So give a round welcome to DJ Orion. So you're actually like incredibly famous among DJs, of course. Now, but no one kind of knows your background. You're Colombian and Puerto Rican. You were born to military parents in Panama. You grew up in Germany. So how did all of this come together to then you just saying, you know what, I'm going to be a DJ?
I think it was more about the party environment. Growing up, seeing my parents having these parandas, these parties in the house with their friends, and being super professional entertainers and doing it with meals and music.
But your parents were actually playing a lot of classical music. Mm-hmm. There was a lot of opera going on. Mm-hmm. How does it then turn out that you're mixing techno music with cumbia and et cetera? How do you end up making that mixture?
Well, I still hold those sounds dear to my heart, but there's an aspect of being a club DJ. It's moving the antiquated sound forward, and it's allowing people to be entertained instead of just listening to some low fidelity music.
So you formed this collective. It's called Peligrosa. You then decide that it's not just about spinning. You
Correct.
Decide that you want Peligrosa to be about what? It's about culture, it's about clothing, it's about food?
It's really, the possibilities are endless in my mind and imagination. We deal with photography, visuals, technology, coding, music, translation, migration, trying to have all those conversations at the same time with different people who may not know that much about where cumbia came from or how it got to the States, but are interested in another aspect of what we do. So through the other things that we do, like the visuals at our shows, we can kind of entertain people while telling them a story and educating them.
You actually said that the reason why you play so much in terms of the music is that you're on a search for your own kind of personal identity, understanding that you kind of grew up always wondering, who am I, where do I belong?
For me growing up, it was never about geography. It was always about the family unit, the education that my parents gave me, and that is what I went with everywhere.
And you talk a lot about borderless music. What do you mean by borderless music?
I think with the advent of technology, especially in the last decade or so, people are starting to have more conversations with each other across borders. For example, when I first started playing cumbia in Austin, there was not that many people that I could reach out to that would be able to come to this party that I wanted to throw. So in order for me to have a sense of belonging, it was me looking for these similar enclaves in my geography and other people's geographies. You know, we couldn't pack out a stadium. There's enough going on around the world where our community is just as big.
I love this quote. I hope this is you, but this is what you said. You like to bring light to undesirable music.
Yes, ma'am.
This notion that poor people's music, mm-hmm. immigrant music, African music, mm-hmm. that's undesirable. And you're saying mm-hmm. you want to bring light.
Yes. You know, a gaita, for example, isn't sought after. You don't hear that in orchestras. The instrument's been around forever, but you don't see anybody playing it. It's that kind of thing, the rhythms that maybe aren't as syncopated as something as easy as pop music, that think maybe are complicated to dance to, aren't really that complicated if you break it down in a certain way, you know?
Mm-hmm. So you really see your whole ethos about creating a community that is actually borderless in terms of culture.
There's people from Brussels, Central and South America, Africa. I get messages on my Bandcamp from people in Moscow. That's borderless to me. Nobody's telling them that they can't talk to me or that I can't talk to them. There we are in this environment talking to each other.
For you, technology has allowed you to live this kind of borderless life.
Yes.
You are a tequinista.
Very, to a fault almost.
What does that mean?
When I see something that I like or that I appreciate, I start to deconstruct it. So it it kind of veers me off in paths sometimes, like learning Python, coding, scripting language, or Quartz Composer, for example, in my leisure time, which turns into not leisure time.
Okay, I'm scared because I'm just like, I don't know what you just said, but I know my husband taught himself to do the same thing, and I'm just like, what? Okay, now if you're a kid, like I have a 15-year-old and I have an 18-year-old, and I know that both of them would love to, you know, play their music for their friends. Mm-hmm. But how do you tell a kid it's not just an illusion, you can actually make a career out of this? How do they get from, wow, I got this great, you know, series of songs, to I can become a DJ and I can launch a career?
You have to want to do it. Most of the really successful people started doing it because they love to do it and they want to promulgate that enthusiasm that they have. So in my mind, in my upbringing of the DJ culture, it was kind of like you had to work towards developing everything about being a DJ, working at clubs, playing gigs you don't enjoy, playing music you don't enjoy, and learning to appreciate things, and learning how sound systems work, and learning how the gear works, and being able to fix it if it's broken, you know? And all that while rocking a party and making people dance.
Now, I'm somebody who, you know, yes, I did grow up listening to LPs, so mm-hmm. what I have in front of me is two techniques.
1200s.
Okay. All right, 1200s. You know, I was once a DJ. I was once a DJ at WKCR in New York, and I actually would lift and put the needle on. But you're going to try and teach me how to do this. Should I be afraid?
Yes.
Oh, God. You just made me really scared. Okay, what do I have to do? What do I have to do?
I mean, basically, you have two inputs into the mixer, and you're mixing between the sources. So conceptually, you don't want to have both things going at the same time for too long. You kind of start playing one song, and then you decide when you want to bring the other song in. You want to try?
Yeah.
You have your crossfader here, so you can go ahead and press the play button on that.
I'm pressing the play button.
No, the other play button.
The other play button.
The start button, sorry.
The square one. Here we go.
All right, and while that's queued up, we're going to start working on this guy. So you put the headphones on, and this is kind of where it gets difficult. So you got to take one ear off. You're listening to the song that's playing with the ear that's off the headphone, and then you're listening to this in this side. So now when you're ready to bring it in, you just move this guy to the left. And then we're gonna do some EQ in here while you're doing that.
Okay, can I get a round of applause?
So. All right,
I just DJ'd. What did I just do? Tell me exactly what I just did.
You just mixed between two songs.
I'm
beautifully.
So cool. Oh my God. Thank you for, yes. What?
What is your DJ name?
Well, I kind of like DJ La Chaparra.
Let's do it.
Although there was somebody else who said DJ Malu Mix, because my nickname is Malu, so DJ Chaparra Malu Mix.
You want to be in Peligrosa?
I want to be a Peligrosa. Absolutely. DJ Orion, thank you so much for playing and spinning and teaching me. That's great. Thank you. South by Southwest is about celebrating creativity in tech and in music, but it's also a major film festival. Now, when people talk about film, they often focus on the visuals, how the film looks. But as radio people, we're especially interested in how films sound. Our next guest is a kind of sound wizard, one of the guys responsible for conjuring up the booms and the bangs that make movies so much fun to watch and listen to. Buzz Moran is an Austin-based sound effects and Foley artist. He hosts a web show about sound called What's That, Buzz? For PBS station KLRU, and he's the sound designer for the award-winning live radio play, The Intergalactic Nemesis. Welcome to Latino USA, Buzz.
Thank you for having me. I appreciate it.
All right, so you do something called live radio plays. What does that mean exactly?
Well, in our case, in the old days, of course, you'd have radio dramas where you would have actors performing the voices, you'd have sound effects. Our show we call a live-action graphic novel. So we're doing all of the sound as if it were a radio play, the musicians, sound effects, actors. But then we have a full comic book of this story, and the individual panels are projected on a huge screen behind the actors.
So you are known as a Foley artist. What does it mean to be a Foley artist?
A Foley artist in film is the person that replaces the real-world sound effects. So things like footsteps, the rustle of clothing, that sort of thing falls under Foley, whereas a giant explosion might be a sound design sound, something that's recorded separately and placed into the film.
Because when you're recording a movie, for example, the microphone will be at the actor's voice, yeah, but won't necessarily be capturing their footsteps when they're walking in. So you're going to show us. Tell me what are you going to show us?
Well, first thing we'll do is just a little bit of footsteps. We'll get some pretty normal sounds here. So we've got a wooden surface and a shoe, and we're just walking around there. But
you had to learn to walk with your hands.
You could normally you'd do it with your feet, but in radio things are a lot different. And then maybe we'll walk outside. So we'll go in some gravel. We'll open up this tiny door. And we'll make it creak using this old radio effect, a creak box.
I always wondered how they would have doors that creaked in the right movies, but now I know.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay, something else.
But then we have a lot sillier sounds over here, some sounds that aren't necessarily real-world normal sounds. So maybe we'll go over some of those. Maybe you would like to close your eyes and guess what some of these sounds are.
Okay.
Yeah.
I'm going to close my eyes. Now, so you're going to make a sound, and I'm going to have to guess, with no help from the studio audience, what the sound is supposed to be. Oh, that sounds like rain. Am I right?
Well, it's not raining in the studio, but it is the sound of rain.
Oh, I got it right.
Instead, it's a baby book.
It's a baby book, like the kind that they...
Some sort of teething book of some sort.
Oh, because baby books always have little sound.
Yeah.
Okay, I'm going to close my eyes again now.
Close your eyes again.
The sound of the wind.
Shh. Don't you think it was you being mesmerized?
It was me being mesmerized by the wind.
Mind powers! here we go. We'll do another little one here. Okay?
Ready? All right, closing my eyes.
Close your eyes.
Since when did you study how to be a sword fighter?
As soon as I stopped serving pizzas with these pizza servers.
Those are not swords. They're pizza spatulas. Really?
Sound effects.
This is all very exciting. If young people are listening to this and they think, you know what, I love sound, I want to do this, can they actually make a living being a Foley artist, a sound designer? Can they take this sense of technology and make it their own?
It sort of depends on what type of living they want to make.
And is there something about Austin, where we are right now recording this live show, that makes it a good place to do the kind of work that you do? Because Austin is it's a creative hub.
Austin in general has always been just a very creative place. There is a ton of theater. There is a ton of tech work here. There is a ton of, and of course, the music scene is gargantuan. So you have all of these people and they're all trying to just do something new, and it all gets sort of mixed up. Like, you may have been a musician that someone asked you to do some sound effects in a radio show, and all of a sudden many years later you're the sound effects guy. So
I have a feeling that's how it all started for you, Buzz.
That's just hypothetical.
Yeah. Buzz Moran, thank you so much for coming on our show. We really appreciate it. Thanks for all the ideas for use of sun. Buzz Moran is a sound effect and Foley artist based out of beautiful Austin, Texas.
Number one, ella es mi mamá, ella es mi abuela, ella es mi tía, eres number one. Africana, 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 eres number one. Africana.
Well, I want to thank all of you for coming to our live taping of Latino USA here in Austin, Texas. We did have a lot of fun. ¿Sí o no? I also want to thank you, Austin, for being the involved, enthusiastic, and committed people you are. Your enthusiasm is infectious, and it's what's going to change our country for the better. I think I speak for my entire staff when I say we do this show because we care about the stories we report on. Whether it's young Latinas becoming scientists or undocumented immigrants struggling to make a living, we often talk to people out there who remind us about being engaged and not giving up, and that democracy, the way we live, is bigger than just casting a vote. It's talking to your friends about what you hear. It's the courage to defend the humanity of your immigrant friends. It's going on hunger strike to protest deportations, as our president claims he's helpless to stop his own policies. Policies that have been called out by the National Council of La Raza, yes, but also by Republicans like the former Commerce Secretary, former SEC commissioners, even, yes, George W. Bush. But immigration policies and the massive number of deportations, almost 2 million now, aren't going to change by themselves. You might have forgotten that it's an election year, and we have maybe the most ineffective Congress in the history of our country. The same Congress that has failed to pass any kind of legislation regarding immigration. So where does change, real change, progress, and humanity start? In our homes, on our school boards, in our city councils, and in City Hall. This is what democracy looks like. It's bigger than just voting. It's tweeting, it's sharing, it's bringing our social capital to social media and to journalism. It's making ourselves heard and making those we love visible, like the hunger strikers, like the Dream Nine, each and every one of us. So Austin, let me hear it. Just what does democracy sound like? I don't know. I would say democracy sounds great. Thank you so much for being part of our live audience here at KU State Studios in Austin, Texas. Thank you so much. That's it for this week on Latino USA. Our show is produced by AC Valdez, Lita Hartman, Daisy Rosario, Marlon Bishop, Michael Simon Johnson, Brenda Salinas, Camilo Vargas, and Nadia Raymond, our music consultant, our interns, Antonia Cerejido and Danielle Gunter. Nancy Trujillo makes it all happen. Special thanks to everyone here at KUT, Stuart Vanderwild, Cliff Hargrove, Hawk Mendenhall, Casey Cheek, Keith Niesler, and Carol Ramsey at Austin Storytelling. Engineering by Cornelius McMoyler. Our show was founded right here at the University of Texas at Austin. I'm your host and executive producer, Maria Hinojosa. Join us again next week. Thank you, Austin, y hasta la próxima. Gracias.
This live episode of Latino USA is supported by the Kaper Center for Social Impact, which leverages technology for positive, progressive change. Tech for good, good for tech. Kapercenter.org.
We use it for the sound of an alien torture device.
Support for NPR comes from NPR stations and Lumber Liquidators, hardwood, bamboo, and cork flooring with a Floor Finder app for iPad and iPhone. Learn more at lumberliquidators.com. And the John D. and Catherine T. MacArthur Foundation, presenting the MacArthur Award for Creative and Effective Institutions. Winners are at macfound.org. And Newman's Own Foundation, giving all profits from Newman's Own to charity and pursuing the common good for over 30 years. This is NPR.